What's up, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Riding the Pine. Jack Ridenour are back with you all today, and as always, we've got another fantastic episode in store for everyone at home. But before I get into all of that, let's take a little dive into the last episode. I was joined by a tremendous guest who's currently playing basketball overseas, current professional overseas basketball player in Belgium, Keith Braxton. Keith and I get into his career starting out at St. Francis University and what led him to wanting to continue his basketball career with the Red Flash, how he was able to make his way over to the professional level of play and what that transition was like for him, and so much more. So if you want to hear about Keith's journey in basketball, go check out episode 280 and all 280 episodes that are out now on all podcast platforms. Now, getting into today, we're going to be joined by another great guest from the basketball world who is also a current overseas pro player, but is also now an assistant high school basketball coach. Current assistant boys basketball coach at Yawk High School and current overseas pro basketball player, Kaysen Harrell. Kaysen and I get into his career starting out locally here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and what it was like going over to Purdue Fort Wayne to continue his career collegiately, why he decided on Purdue Fort Wayne, and what it was like eventually going off and playing professionally and what that transition was like for him, why he got into coaching this year and what went into his decision to take a break from playing and get back into coaching, and so much more. So if you want to hear about how Yawk's basketball season has been and about Kaysen's journey in hoops, don't go anywhere, because here comes Kaysen Harrell. So with that, folks, let's make our way into our show for today. So as always, be sure to find your favorite seat here on the bench with me. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And I'm here with current assistant boys basketball coach at Yawk High School and overseas pro basketball player, Kaysen Harrell. Kaysen, great to get you on the show today, my friend. How's it going?
Oh, it's going good, Jack. Appreciate you having me on the show.
Absolutely, my friend. Well, hey, listen, I appreciate you taking a little bit of time. I know that you just said that you wrapped up some practice, so I'd love to hear just how the season has been for the Yawk Cougars, but more importantly, how are you enjoying this little kind of break from playing and kind of getting back into the, or kind of getting into the coaching side of things?
You know, it's been a very, very interesting year. You know, I came back when we were about three games in and was able to, you know, hop on the staff again and finish out the season. We've had some up times, some down times a little bit. You know, we had a little bit of a rough patch there right before Christmas, but I feel like now we're kind of starting to hit our stride. And I mean, we always say we want to be playing our best basketball in January and February. So I feel like we're finally starting to hit our stride. And, you know, we got a big game tomorrow against Brownsville at Brownsville. So hopefully we can come out of here with a win and start the second round of section playoff right.
You make a great point about wanting to peak at the right time. And, you know, this is no better time to start peaking, January, February time. And, you know, especially with playoffs right around the corner, I know how good of a season that you guys have been having, and also how good of a season Tarik Crosby has been having for you guys. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But I want to get into your career, Kaysen, because I know that you're local standout from around here, graduated from Hemphill, the all-time leading scorer for the Spartans. What was it for you just in the high school days at Hemphill that you feel kind of allowed you to, you know, separate yourself from other players in the area and really allow you to be, again, an elite scorer around here?
I mean, number one, honestly, and I always say this whenever people ask about my playing, you know, career, you know, gotta give all glory to God. You know, he's been the biggest reason why I've been able to accomplish some of the things that I've accomplished. And, you know, my faith is number one in my life for sure. So I really, really grasp onto that, you know, harder than anything. But, you know, just in high school, you know, I really just try to work as hard as I could every single day, whether it was in practice, by myself, you know, with my dad in the gym, or, you know, just by myself with maybe one of our assistant coaches. I just try to work as hard as I can and get reps of shots up, whether it was shooting, ball handling, weightlifting, whatever it was. I just wanted to be the hardest worker on the team. And, you know, me being able to work as hard as I did and being able to just really just embrace just the, you know, the hard work ethic and the hard work mentality really helped me to have a great high school career. I really played with some great guys also. You know, me and you were talking about Logan Hunter. You know, that was one of my good friends and, you know, one of my shooters I was able to, you know, find on the wing all the time. And I played with other great guys. Tony Pilato was my, you know, was my big man, and I was able to play with him. And just some other guys that were just able to kind of just play like those key roles of defending and rebounding and, you know, guys that can make shots. So, and I also have some great coaches. You know, I was blessed to have, you know, three coaches in 4 years. But all of them, you know, all believed in me and all helped me get to where I'm at today. So I'm really grateful for that as well.
Well, I'll tell you this right now. I actually still play with Logan and Big T, as he's affectionately known. And Logan still can shoot. I'll give you that one. Logan can still definitely shoot. So nothing has changed there. Yeah, he still can shoot. I don't know how he does it. He's got a bad back and all, but he still is able to figure it out, I guess. But I do want to ask, with you being such a great scorer in high school, and again, like I mentioned, Tarik Crosby, a player of yours at Yawk that just recently reached the 1,000-point mark. I mean, what was some advice or just kind of, you know, maybe some input that you shared with him, being, you know, again, somebody that was in his shoes not that long ago? And what was some of the advice that you gave to him, you know, not only just after scoring that, but then moving forward from here?
I mean, Tarik's one of the best players around here. I mean, easily. I mean, he's, you know, really athletic, you know, has a good handle. He can shoot pretty well. My advice to him is just to always just stay hungry. You know, a lot of times when kids reach that 1,000-point mark, they kind of start getting complacent and they just kind of ease off of things. Like, you know what, I reached 1,000. Like, you know, I think I'm cool for now. But I think that he has the capability to play at the next level. So I just always try to encourage him just to keep working, just to stay hungry, and just, you know, find things that he can still work on his own. You know, things that he can look in the mirror after a game and say, okay, well, like, what can I do better? Just to always just never get satisfied, just to keep working hard. And he's been great this year. Right now, I believe he's playing his best basketball, and we just really want him to keep doing that and, you know, just keep his confidence up as we move closer to playoff time.
Well, I think it's great. He's got a coach in you that he can, you know, kind of lean on for that type of advice. And again, somebody that has, you know, kind of walked the walk and wants to do what he, you know, what he wants to do, you know, again, become a professional basketball player and pursue the game of basketball in full. So I think it's great that you can be there with him along the way. But I know that you went on from Hemfield to then Purdue Fort Wayne, had a very successful career there. But what led you to wanting to continue your career at Purdue Fort Wayne?
So it's actually a crazy story. So the summer going into my senior year of high school, you know, I was doing the whole AAU thing and trying to, you know, see what kind of offers I could get, see if, you know, what kind of schools are interested. And I had actually gotten an offer from the University of North Carolina at Wilmington, which was actually going to be my first choice. I went and visited the school. Me and my mom went and visited the school. Loved the school, loved the area, loved the coaching staff. So that was actually going to be my first choice. Unfortunately, whenever I called him and told him I wanted to commit, they had already given my scholarship away to someone else. So I was kind of stuck. I'm like, I didn't know what I was going to do. So we had our last AAU tournament right after that in Louisville. It was our nationals. So I went down there and we're playing, and I wasn't sure if anyone had really been interested in me at that point. So I get home a few days later, I get a call from Coach Ben Botts, who's now at Ball State, but was an assistant at Purdue Fort Wayne. And he called, and me and him just kind of started, you know, talking about the school and everything. And I didn't know much about the school. I didn't even know they were Division I school. And so I really wasn't going to give them any time of the day. My mind was set on playing Division I basketball. And like, I just did not know, you know, what kind of school they were. Well, my dad ended up doing research on them and found out, hey, they're a mid-major Division I school, but they also almost made the tournament last year. So you might want to give these guys a little bit more interest. So I started, you know, talking to the assistant coaches. And then I finally got up to go up to a visit where I met Coach Kaufman and the rest of the staff, got to meet the team. And just like whenever I went on that visit, it was just like a family vibe. Like, it wasn't just about basketball, but I really felt like a family type of environment whenever I was there. The guys treated me like family. The coaches treated me like family. The coaches' families treated me like family. And it was just an amazing time on the visit. So on my way home, you know, I started praying and asking, you know, God, if this was the place he wanted me to go. And I just got that feeling that it was, that this was the place he wanted me to be. So that led me to commit there. And I mean, it ended up being the best decision I ever made, because I had an awesome 4 years there. I played with some great players. You know, my coaches were all, you know, very impactful in my life on and off the court. And just each year they helped me get better until, you know, my senior year, I was able to have a productive senior year, and I got to play, you know, alongside my man John Conchar, who's playing for the Grizzlies right now. You know, he really helped me to, you know, up my game. And yeah, I wouldn't be, you know, playing professional basketball if those guys hadn't taken a chance on me, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. So I'll always be grateful to them for that.
Well, I have to ask, with you being, you know, really, I would say a stone's throw away from going to UNC Wilmington, How often do you play out your kind of life and say, I wonder what would have happened if it, you know, had gone the other way and gone to Wilmington?
I mean, yeah, I mean, those thoughts always do come. You know, I always kind of wonder, you know, what would have happened. But, you know, like I always say with anything, you know, God always has a plan. So, you know, if it was his plan for me to go to Purdue Fort Wayne, and, you know, he hasn't failed me yet. So, you know, I can never question his plan. So, but I mean, I always do kind of think about, you know, what would have happened. But and then I just, you know, think, you know what, God had me going there for a reason. So.
Well, good thing you chose Fort Wayne, and good thing that your dad also did a little bit of research. So shout out to your dad for that one also. Yes. But I want to also ask with again, and for people that are at home that are listening that don't know and aren't aware, in Pennsylvania high school basketball, there's no shot clock. And this will maybe lead into a tangent. I don't know. We'll see. When you went from playing high school to college basketball, and I'm very curious about this, especially with, you know, again, having to go and play Division I basketball, you have a shot clock all of a sudden. What was that adjustment like for you? I mean, how, if at all, shocking and kind of shell-shocking, really, was that when you first stepped foot on a college floor and you said, whoa, I've got 30, 35 seconds to make a decision?
I'll be honest, not that big of an adjustment. And I think the reason why is because all 4 years of playing high school, we always played fast. So like we never really slowed the ball down, ran set after set after set, you know, we never had to deal with too much, you know, too many teams that were able to slow us down too much. So it didn't affect me too much. But I do think that if I had a shot clock, I think I would have been able to probably manage it a little bit better. Just from going to high school, and I know there were games where like teams were like, hold the ball for like minutes at a time against us. And I would just be like, oh my gosh, like this is like just so frustrating. Like I'd be sitting there frustrated. I just want to get the ball and go. And then you look at the college game where like guys maybe run like a set, you know, maybe two sets. And then all of a sudden it's like, all right, clear the floor. Like we got to get a bucket because there's only like 7 seconds left on the shot clock. So there was a little bit of an adjustment just from the aspect of, you know, me having to make a play, you know, against time. And I think that, you know, fast forward to kind of today, when you see a lot of kids that go to college, you can kind of see how it kind of throws them off a little bit, especially if they're coming from a school where, you know, they held the ball for 3-4 minutes. And I've seen it. I've seen so many games in varsity where teams hold the ball for 3-4 minutes at a time. And it's just like, what the heck is this? Like, it's not like this. It's just like, sometimes I'm just like, is this basketball? Cause like, it's just so boring. Like I hate to say that, but it is just so boring sometimes watching some of these teams that just hold the ball game after game after game.
I completely agree with you. And again, I'm on the media side of things, and I am a former player many, many years ago, but I mean, I'm from Maryland, and we had shot clock in high school. I mean, even in JV basketball, we had shot clock. Now it was, you know, 35 seconds or whatever, but still we knew what it was like to play in that quickened pace. And, you know, I guess for me, I just feel like for a lot of kids, I feel it sets them back a little bit, you know, when they first come to college and they're like, where did this shot clock come from? So my follow-up to you is, do you think that the WPIAL should get a shot clock?
Yes. I've been saying that for years. I've been saying it even like probably like my sophomore, junior year of high school, I was saying we need a shot clock. And it's funny because I actually would go to like these national high school tournaments and I would watch like Oak Hill, Finley Prep, Montville, like these top high schools play with a shot clock. And then when I was in Ireland, I was coaching a 13U boys team. They used a shot clock. So it's like, how can 13-year-olds overseas play with a shot clock, but we can't play with one at the high school level out here? And then you see like these guys that go to college from overseas, and it's like the game, it's like not much of an adjustment. Like maybe the biggest adjustment is like the athleticism of the guys that they play against. But as far as like the IQ, knowing how to play, knowing how to manage time, knowing how to manage score, like they know how to do that from the jump. And I feel like out here with these kids that go off to college, like they have to adjust to that, and it takes time. So I've been saying for years that the WPIAL needs a shot clock. And I'm hoping that enough people keep pushing for it to where it actually happens. I'm hoping it happens soon. That's just my wish.
Hey, you and me both, my friend. I'll be right in line behind you, signing my name on that piece of paper to get a shot clock put in. Because to your point, again, and you bring up a very valid point about it, is holding the ball. And that, in my opinion, is that's not, like you said, that's not basketball, right? No. This is in the UNC from 1980s where it's four corners and just get out of the way and dribble the ball out for 5 minutes, right? I mean, that is not basketball. And then people wonder, well, okay, well, then why can't, you know, and again, this is just maybe a general statement, but why can't people from Pennsylvania go off and play college basketball and perform just like other guys from other states can also do, right? And I think in a weird way, it does come back to that shot clock aspect, because like you said, even managing the time of the game. I mean, that's a great point that you bring up that a lot of guys are clueless on, right? And it's to no fault of their own. It's the fact that the rules that they're playing with is, well, there's no shot clock. And that's why you see in a varsity score, and I'm sure that you've, you know, maybe seen it this year or previous years, you know, the final score is 35 to 30.
Man, I'll never forget. It was my senior year of high school, I believe. I think it was Penn Trafford and Kiske were playing. Triple overtime game. The final score was 24 to 22. Triple overtime. And I was looking up like the stats and like seeing like what happened. I heard that in the first quarter, the score after the first quarter was 4-2 because both teams played zone and both teams held the ball. That was like my initial moment where I realized, yeah, we need a shot clock out here because this is ridiculous. Like, there's no way a final score of a high school basketball game should ever be in the 20s in regulation, let alone three overtimes. So it's like stuff like that. Like it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Like I'm just waiting for the day where I see something in the paper where it says that the WPBL and the PIAA finally agree to have a shot clock in high school basketball. I will rejoice on that day because I'll just feel like we're going to get these kids more equipped to go play college basketball, the ones that have the skill to do it, and they'll be able to play actual basketball with the shot clock and be able to manage the time, manage the score, and just be ready for that next level. Because I just feel like right now, like these kids holding the ball and doing all that, it doesn't get them ready for the next level. It just doesn't.
It doesn't. No, you're completely right. I think it teaches them the very opposite of the game of basketball, where it's supposed to be passing, moving, movement. You know, they call it poetry in motion for a reason, not poetry in standstill, right? There's a reason for that. But anyways, we'll get out of that tangent because I know you and I, we could go on and on and on all night about that.
Yeah, listen, I really could.
That's something that really boils my blood. Anywho, we'll get back to your career because you ended up at Purdue Fort Wayne, also being an all-time scorer there, finished top 10, finished in eighth place in career points. What was a part of your game that you feel that at times maybe was overshadowed or overlooked? Because, you know, the highlight was just you being able to score so much in your offensive side of things. But what was a part of your game you felt that still really, you know, maybe defined you as a player, but was always kind of a subsidiary or a secondary aspect?
Honestly, it's the thing that kept me from playing my first 2 years and the thing that actually got me to start as a sophomore more was on the defensive side. My freshman year, I did not play a lot because I was not able to guard these guys. And part of it was because, like, I was coming from Western PA where, you know, I'm the best guy on my team. And, you know, the guys I'm playing against in practice every day, you know, didn't really take basketball serious maybe, or they just weren't that good. Now I'm coming to college where every guy was the best player on their high school team. Every guy was that, you know, one of the lean scorers in their high school, you know, all-star games, all of that. So I had to really like hone in on the defensive side. And my first year, it was such a struggle. Like I remember my first practice going up against John Conchar, who I said before is playing in the league. First practice, he killed me. Like I got exposed and I had never been exposed like that ever in practice. And that was just like my wake up call. Like, hey, you got a long way to go before, you know, we can touch, you know, we're going to touch this floor. So we're going to have to work. And so, like, my assistant coaches would, like, help me with, like, my lateral quickness, work on me with my footwork and all that kind of stuff in the summertime. And before I know it, from my sophomore to junior year, I'm going from a guy that can't really guard to a guy that's guarding the other team's best player every single night. I've had to guard guys like Kendrick Nunn, Kevin Knox, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, guys that are in the league right now making millions. Like, I had to guard these guys. And even in the Summit League, I got to guard a lot of the team's best players. And I think that that aspect of my game I don't want to say it wasn't, I don't want to say it was like overshadowed, but I think a lot of guys just saw that I could shoot and I was able to score. Because I'll be honest, like defense, it doesn't really get highlighted. Doesn't make it on SportsCenter, doesn't make it on highlight tapes, you know, it doesn't do all that. But to have a guy that can score and also be able to defend is such a treat to have for any team. And that's why I try to tell the guys that I coach that want to play at the next level. Like, if you guys want to play at the next level, you have to show that you can play defense, because defense is what's going to keep you on the floor. Because college guys coming in, they're not looking for guys that can just score. I mean, there's a lot of guys that can score. They want guys that can play defense, guys that can rebound, guys that'll talk on defense, guys that'll, you know, do the little things. So I think the defensive side of the court was something that I think that people really didn't appreciate as much as they did, you know, me being able to shoot and being able to score.
Well, I think it's great on you that you were able to quickly, you know, make note of what you needed to improve on, and then you went right to work, right? I think that's the thing also when guys go to college, you know, you have that pride that creeps in. Like you said, everybody's coming from being the best guy on their team. And it's like, why do I need to work out like that? I don't need to do that. I wasn't doing it before and it was working. But once you realize, and like you said, you're challenged by somebody else that's better than you, that's the only way you get better, is by going up against guys that are better than you. And that's exactly what you did. And it worked for you, you know, and then eventually you get recognized to go play professionally. And I would love to hear just what that process was like for you, you know, coming from a mid-major school and then going overseas and playing professionally. How did that whole process kind of come about for you?
I'll be honest, the process was a long process, I'll tell you that. You know, after the season ended in Fort Wayne after my senior year, started looking at agents. I finally got to sign with an agency. I went home after I graduated, got, you know, right back to work in the gym and just kind of waiting to see like what kind of opportunities I was going to get. Initially, I wanted to try and play in the G League. So I actually got the chance to go to a open tryout for the Fort Wayne Mad Ants, which is the G League affiliate for the Indiana Pacers. Was blessed enough to be able to make it to training camp with the Mad Ants. Got cut. I was the last cut right before the season started, which was a bummer. But you know, came home, went back to work, and then a week later, I got a call from the team in Ireland called Colester Basketball Club in Ireland. And they had reached out to my agent and asked if I wanted to come play. You know, we both decided it was a good move. And, you know, I ended up going over there and being able to have a successful rookie year over there, which was a very, very great time for me. Ireland was, I mean, the city was amazing. The country was amazing. The people there, you know, welcomed me. They treated me like family. And I was able to, you know, visit a lot of cool sites out there and see a lot of the country. And on the basketball side, just being able to fulfill a dream that I had had since I was a kid. You know, I've always dreamed of playing professional basketball. And, you know, finally being able to do that was just, you know, a blessing. And I, you know, thank God for that every single day.
So what was kind of the fan reception of not just your team specifically, but just the sport of basketball overall? I mean, how do you think that the sport of basketball was viewed and received by everybody in Ireland?
I'll be honest, basketball really wasn't like, I mean, it wasn't the favorite over there. But it was, the reception was a lot better than what I thought. I was thinking like, okay, Ireland, you know, Europe, it's going to be mainly like soccer, you know, rugby. Like I didn't think basketball was going to have, I thought the games were going to be like a Saturday morning scrimmage crowd. Like I didn't know what kind of crowds we were going to get. And I'll tell you what, like, especially from like the young kids, they love going to those Irish Super League games. I mean, those stands were packed. And I mean, the crowds were loud. They were energetic. Guys would be banging drums during the game. Guys would be blowing horns during the game. Like, it was just, it would get really, really, really hype. And especially our home games, I mean, we'd have the young kids that'd be just screaming and chanting. And it's like, I was like taking back whatever, like my first home game. I was just like, man. And then like the reception for like the Americans over there was amazing. I mean, they love Americans over there. Like my first game, no one had seen me play ever. No one even knew like if I was even good or not. They announced my name and everyone just went crazy. And I'm like, wow, like this is insane. But the reception for basketball over there was actually really good. And honestly, it's only gotten better. Like, they've started to embrace basketball a lot more. I've noticed, like, the crowds over there have grown. The venues have kind of changed. Like, people have had to, like, change their venues over there because the crowds have gotten so big. Like, it's become such a big deal over there. It really has.
Well, that's awesome. And I think it's great that you were able to go, you know, your first professional stop is a place where they really do love basketball, right? Instead of going somewhere where, like you said, it's a great, great way of defining it, a Saturday morning scrimmage. I don't know why, but when you said that, you just think of a closed scrimmage. Nobody's allowed in there. Maybe mom and dad, if you're lucky, and that's about it. So that's a really good way of putting it. But what was it just getting adjusted to life off the court and overseas and just in another country and everything else? I mean, everything between getting adjusted to the time zone and everything else that you could think of just off the court. What was that part like?
Oh, man. Time zone was the hardest thing, man. I did not sleep great. My first few weeks over there, I was staying up late because my body just didn't want to fall asleep. I would wake up early, just would not be able to fall back asleep. And so that was like the biggest adjustment. But being a professional, I mean, like, that's your only job is playing basketball. There's no class. There's no, you know, job in between. Like, that is your job. So, like, the one of the challenges I had to do was, like, just not, like, lay around the house all day. Like, go out, you know, go for a walk, you know, go see the country, like, go see, like, what, you know, what it has to offer. And I was blessed enough to have some good people around the club that were able to kind of give me some ideas of things to do, things to see. So I really took advantage of that, especially when my parents came out. We went on tours. We went and saw castles and other, like, legendary places in Ireland. And just, you know, was able to just really have the full experience of being overseas. So, you know, being able to go out and see the country and being able to meet people that were able to, you know, help you find other things to do, other things to see was really helpful and helped me to adjust, like, kind of being on my own in a different country. And, yeah, it was great. I mean, I saw some really cool things. You know, I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. I got to actually go to where they actually film most of Game of Thrones up in Northern Ireland, up in Belfast. I was able to go up there and see that, which was really cool. And, it was a really great time. And, I really enjoyed my time over there.
Well, I know that you're back here in the States, like we mentioned earlier, coaching and whatnot. And what was it, or when was it? Did you kind of start to realize, you know, maybe I'll dip back into some coaching. I'll take a little break from playing.
Well, I was over in Greece earlier this year. I was over in Cyprus playing over there, and, you know, some stuff happened over there where I just felt like I needed a break. And I was keeping in touch with my high school, you know, with the team back here that I'm coaching with now. I've been working with them all summer, working with them, training them myself. So I really got invested emotionally with the team. Like, I love these group of guys that work hard. They're a great group of kids. So I was keeping in contact with them while I was gone, and just, you know, checking up on them, you know, checking the scores, seeing how they were doing. So when I had decided to come home, first thing I did was I hit up my coach and I said, "Hey coach, like, I'm coming back home. You know, is it possible for me to still be able to hop on the staff, you know, while I'm home, because I'm probably going to be home for, you know, the rest of the season." I said, "Oh yeah, of course, you know, come back." You know, it was funny because as soon as I got off the plane, the first place I went was right to practice. Like, I came home, dropped my bags off. I said, "All right, I'm going over to practice." And I was able to see the guys, and, you know, they welcomed me back with open arms. And, you know, I even before I left, like, I was thinking, like, you know, if I don't get a job this year, you know, I'm gonna just stay in coach. Cause I really, it's cool being on that side of the floor. And, you know, with the experiences that I've had, you know, both, you know, in the WPL also, but also just, like, playing at the next level. And I knew that we had kids that wanted to play at the next level. I just, you know, wanted to be able to answer any questions that they had and just kind of give them that good guidance, just to kind of lead them in the right direction. So coaching had always kind of been in the back of my mind. And whenever I decided to come home and kind of take a break from playing for the rest of this year, that was the first thing I wanted to do, was just hop right back into it.
Well, I personally think it's a great thing that you've been able to come back to this area and almost act as an ambassador, really, for basketball. I mean, you know, you think about, you know, Western Pennsylvania, and you're not thinking of basketball, right? That's not the, you're thinking of football. That's the first thing you're going to think of no matter what. And, you know, for me, somebody that came from the Maryland, DC area, first thing I'm thinking of is basketball. That's the first thing that's coming to mind. But I think it's great because you're one of the, you know, and again, you're a name that everybody knows around here, and you've been able to come back here. You share your knowledge, you share your experience, you share really everything that you have to offer. And that's a ton to all these other kids that are looking up to you and saying, I want to be like Cason Harrell. How do I be like him? And I think it's awesome that you've been able to come back and kind of, again, be that, you know, voice for them, or really just, like I said, an ambassador for them to kind of lean on and again, get that guidance from. But again, Cason, it's been great to get you on the show today. Before we let you run, one final little question. And I'd love to hear this one from you, because I think that, again, it's a very, you know, unique question here in terms of just when you realize, when you had kind of the epiphany, if you will, as to, you know, when you realized you could play basketball at the pro level. So when did that aha moment kind of go off for you? And you said, I can definitely do this.
Man, you know, probably seventh or eighth grade. I just saw like my peers that played basketball and just saw how much time I was investing into it. Just like all the early morning workouts in the summertime, the, you know, going 2-3 times a day in the summer and like during school, like staying after school, getting up 1,000 shots a day. You know, on the weekends, you know, going and working out with my dad for 2-3 hours and just seeing how no one else around here was really doing that. And, me and my dad were just like talking and we decided like, you know, that this was something I wanted to pursue. And it's funny because, we actually drew up a contract when I was in eighth grade. And on the contract, it basically says that I was going to do everything I had to, and I was going to keep God first, and that I was going to make it to the professional basketball level. It was an actual contract. I think I have a copy of it somewhere. If I can find it, I'll send it over to you. The actual contract actually says, like, you know, like, I, Cason Harrell, from this day, I forget what the accurate day was, but like, I'm going to keep God first and continue to work as hard as I can to play, you know, professional basketball. And me and my dad signed it. And from that point on, that was our goal. And like, we just approached every single workout, every single shooting session. Like, I'm not getting ready for Pentraft, or I'm not getting ready for Norman. Like, I'm getting ready to go play professional basketball. And, I just been working at it ever since. And, you know, I've had times where, you know, maybe doubt did creep in, especially my first year of college, like not playing. I was like, oh, I mean, dang, like if I can't even play my first year of college, like how is this going to happen, you know? And, you know, sometimes where I didn't have good games, but, you know, obviously keeping God first, but like, just like the support I had from like my friends and family and, you know, my teammates and coaches and, you know, guys that really invested in me, it just really helped me get to where I'm at. And I'm always be grateful for them.
Well, you've definitely put in a lot of time and a lot of work into the sport of basketball, and it's given back to you, I think, tenfold, if you will, especially with just how far you've gone and you'll continue to go. And again, Cason, really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for stopping by, and good luck the rest of the season with the Yawk Cougars.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate you having me on the show, man. Appreciate it.
And there he goes, Cason Harrell, another fantastic episode today, everyone. Thanks for joining me here on the bench. Be sure to keep following and subscribing to Ride in the Pine on Apple and Spotify, and keep following on Twitter at RideThePine20, RTP all capital, Instagram at Riding_the_pine_all_, and on TikTok at RideInThePine_all_ for all the latest updates on episodes and content to come. All 281 episodes are out now. Keep leaving those ratings and reviews. And again, folks, keep your eyes and ears open for some more great guests and content coming out here on RTP. But once again, everyone, thanks so much for tuning in today. And until next time on Ride in the Pine, keep on sitting the bench with me.